Hey everyone, welcome to Reality TV Wrap-Ups for this episode 2 of The Amazing Race Canada Season 6, in which teams traveled to Dawson City, Yukon. And I gotta be honest, Dan Heaton, there was a long time in my life, like embarrassingly long for someone who's fairly up and up on geography, where I did not know Yukon was a real place. It's one of those things like people not knowing reindeer are real animals, but Yukon's a real place, Dan.
Who knew? Now, I mean, for me, because it's one of the things you see in shows and stuff a lot, and they're like, I'm from the Yukon. And this is totally not a good way to approach the Yukon as someone from the U.S. But, you know, so it does seem a little like it's a fictional, magical place. And it is the furthest north they've ever gone on The Amazing Race Canada. So it's not like it's right down the street, you know. It'd be a little harder if it was something closer to where you are, Jess.
Yeah, I guess so. And in fairness, I think the first place I heard of Yukon being a real place, when I was a kid, we drove up to Medicine Hat, Alberta for a vacation. We stopped at McDonald's. My Happy Meal prize turned out to be, and this is a very Canadian thing, I guess, I got this little cardboard slider of facts about the Canadian provinces.
Well, that's cool. That is so much better than getting like Mr. Incredible or something, or, you know, something, whatever's happening at the time.
Yeah, it was totally cool because, you know, me and trivia, like I learned, you know, the pitcher plant is the provincial plant of Ontario or something like that. I think it's Ontario. And you could just like slide it back and forth and it would tell you like the flower and the flag and the capital and all this stuff. And I was like, oh, wow, Yukon. I think that was the first place I saw it as a real place and not like some place that Calvin and Hobbes were threatening to run away to.
Well, yeah, well, it's fun. Like when we answered the question last week about where we'd like for them to go, I talked about places that I don't know much about. And the Yukon definitely fit that bill, and places they haven't been before, which is also true. So from a travel perspective, it was really cool they went there today.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And I think everybody was really hyped for this. Although we did get a couple of tweets from people that were very disappointed not to see a particular challenge that should have happened if they're going to Yukon. And apparently there is a cocktail that is famous in Dawson City in the Yukon called a sour toe cocktail. Dan, have you heard about this?
I have not, but I would love to know because this is intriguing to me.
Apparently it is an alcoholic beverage that also contains a mummified human toe.
Oh, that would not have been my guess at all. Well, that would be great because the question is, though, how many mummified human toes are just around for this drink to happen?
Well, I think people donate them. Like if you lose a toe in an accident, you can donate your toe, and maybe you can also donate it after you die. I'm not sure. I feel like the toe has to come from a living person is something I might have heard at some point. But man, that is a strange cocktail, and someone had to have thought that up.
Well, and that's much better than my usual just drink a beer challenge that I want them to have. So this is next level. I'm disappointed, especially given what we got for the detour. I'm a little disappointed this didn't come up.
It's true. I feel like this, at the bare minimum, this should have been a fast forward.
Yeah, or they should have made them do it to get an express pass. It's like, oh yeah, you can go, let's see a little dance or go find a box, but how about this? Who can drink one of these? That is the trick. And they really missed an opportunity here.
Yeah, they absolutely did. But I think we should actually talk about this. Like, you could have gone into the bar where they serve the sour toes. That could absolutely have been one of your destinations with this route marker task where everybody had the GPS and they had to find all of the different spots. Like, make one of those be, oh, drink the sour toe. Because I think really this was the centerpiece of the episode, and this was our kind of showcase of what Dawson City is all about. Everybody has to run around town with a GPS, and it did feel a little bit low rent. I gotta be honest. It felt a little bit like Dawson City's throwing their own like one day version of The Amazing Race to cure toe cancer or something. And they give everybody a GPS and this is what they do, right?
Yeah, you know, I like tasks like this because as opposed to something we see every time, I'm like, at least they are really going to more places in the town where you have things like a cultural center and a cemetery and a post office. That's cool. It connects. But it did seem like maybe because, you know, obviously they can't stop at everyone and be like, this is the post office where Farmer Jim did the gold rush. And that's the worst name ever. It's the first thing I thought of. But you get the idea. They could have, if they had stopped at each place, somebody watching, you know, I don't know if everyone watching is as interested in some of this as we are. People watching would be like, come on, please, just who's getting the express pass? What are people doing? Where I'd be like, this is kind of cool. This is interesting. But that is the downside. But I agree. I think also because the town was so deserted. Now, I don't know if they just probably cleared it out for this task or something, or if really those areas being kind of historic are just not, they're not that many people. It seemed a little bit like they were like just going through this kind of empty ghost town in a way, which was fun, but not always the most thrilling in terms of the activity.
Yeah, it's true. It felt like the locals were a little bit limited here. And I think this kind of occurred throughout the episode. It was like the only people that they ran into were people that were arranged by the show, which is a little Twilight Zone-y.
The other option is that, like, they just edited that way. And on the edge of every frame, there was like 50 people watching the show. And they always edited it where we only saw where the people were running. Now, that seems like a lot of work, but that is the other option. Though I do like your idea of teams coming in. They're just like, what are they doing? What's going on? This is really, especially when you had Leanne and Mara at one point going up this hill and traveling into the cemetery, where I was just like, are they even like on the race course anymore? Like, what is happening here? So that was a little more effective than some of the other areas. But to me, this was still the most interesting, partially because of the express pass, though we did have that montage of people saying express pass 100 times, but also just because I didn't find myself as interested in the detour. I know I'm jumping way ahead. So I felt like this episode on the whole was much more interesting in its first half than its second half, especially because you kind of had this inevitable sense it wasn't going to be an elimination leg.
Didn't feel like that, because I thought for sure at several points, and I think we need to backtrack. I mean, the less said about the product placement set up your tent challenge, the better. But we should probably backtrack to that, because I thought for sure we were seeing people lose a leg on the first task, because this was just one of these completely nuts tasks that people were having so much trouble with on tiny little details. And it, you know, we've seen this type of task before a lot, where you have to, you're given an example and you have to make your thing look exactly like the example. And this is with the added bonus of being sponsored by Woods.
Yeah, didn't they do this last season? Am I wrong in this? I feel like they did something with a tent with Woods last season. Now, I did not check it again, so it might have been the season before, but I know they have done a task very similar to this before. Now, they spent a lot of time on this, and I wasn't that bothered by it. Mainly because I found myself fascinated by the fact that the judge said something different every single time someone did anything. And her excitement, like when she told, like on certain points, I found very endearing. Like, people talk about the can-can judge, we'll get to later. For me, the camp judge nearly made this task, because I kept thinking, does she have like 30 lines that she just keeps picking? Because she's not saying the same thing. Like, she said, you'll have to check your campsite again. Then later she said, check again. Then at one point, my favorite point was her yelling very happily, you're ready to camp, where I was like, wow, this is great. You know, so she had, I wrote down all of them, but I will save the listeners here at this point. But my point is, I could look over all that, you know, and Adam, of course, thinking this task was for him and failing. But in general, I agree that the most thing to watch for this is just, you saw all the teams from Team Dan failing dramatically like usual.
Yep. Back half was like, we got their 5-way split screen and it's everybody on Team Dan.
Except for Nancy and Melissa. Thank you, Nancy and Melissa. But highlighted, of course, by Joseph and Akash. Forgetting their tent. Guys, this is, you're not rewarding your faith in me here. You're not rewarding my faith in you here with your start here. This was ugly, but I give them credit. They hung in there. They fought it out. But I mean, was there, beyond people forgetting the bag, was there much else here, Jess, that we need to talk about?
Not really. I mean, you've pointed out correctly, we've seen this task before. I think what we saw last season specifically was a challenge where they had to like run around back and forth to all these different campsites and spot different objects of Woods camping gear. Because Woods is a fairly recent sponsor, as I recall. Right. They're like Canadian L.L. Bean, maybe. But we have seen, I think it was a detour option, maybe in season two, you were allowed to do this, set up your campsite to look exactly like the example. And of course, we've seen it in Amazing Race U.S. as recently as season 25, I believe, which was the one with the flower pot that had the flower painted on one side that had the different number of petals. And it almost eliminated Whitney and Keith, which made us all very sad. So this is a pretty bog standard task, and there's not much to be said about it, except that it just highlighted, like, Joseph and Akash, you guys are supposed to be super fans, man. You should know what this task is all about. How do you set up a campsite and forget your tent?
Oh, man. And also it pointed out, too, that Phil and Martina are city people, and they even got the Dodo music there for a while. Yet they still were better than multiple teams, because those two actually talked it out and worked together well. And on the other flip side, Todd and Anna just killed it. And that's pretty much, they were done with this episode so quickly. And part of it is they just rolled through everything. They made it look so easy.
Yeah, they did everything perfectly. Like, I think it might be the most perfect leg we've seen so far is Todd and Anna this week.
Are they our Gino and Jesse of the season, Todd and Anna? They were third last week, first now. I don't know. I don't want to overstate it because it's so early. And really, when you see teams leave the country is when you really tell who's good and who's not. But they just have glided through two episodes like it's nothing.
But, you know, there's a pretty good field of competition here. I think we saw a lot of teams do very well this week, and we can talk. We're going to have to now backtrack, and I guess we're doing like a whole U-turn ourselves. We're going to go back and talk about this GPS task a little bit more, because we need to talk about the express passes. But I would say Nancy and Melissa had a perfect leg just about. I would say that Leanne and Mar showed us a side of themselves. Like, they got first in the first leg, but they were great again this leg. I think we have a whole batch of front runner teams here, and I think it's way too early to say that one team is going to take it all.
Oh, I agree. And I wouldn't pinpoint that. I've just been, you have to remember that not, we didn't think they were the worst, but somehow Todd and Anna were picked last in our draft. And the fact that they're doing so well, and I was inches from picking them. But the point is that there are a lot of good teams, and in general, most teams, and teams were thrown a little bit by the express pass, particularly Dylan and Kwame. But I guess, yeah, up front, what do you think of this? Is the second season in a row we've had three express passes. Last season, unfortunately for the show, Team Giver got all three kind of randomly, but it was all in this ropes course where they were all very close together. This time they spread it out. And I think the goal was purposefully, let's make sure this gets split up among multiple teams. Do you like having three, though? I mean, that's a lot to keep track of.
Well, I'm gonna give you a pretty controversial take on this. And I say the more express passes, the better. Like, this is the school of thought. Like, we've had people suggest that there should be a Survivor season where everybody gets an idol. And this is kind of the same thing. Like, let's have lots and lots of advantages and see what happens when there's a whole bunch. Because if you just have like one express pass or two express passes, you know, they become a hotter commodity. They become a bigger advantage. And if you have several, that kind of dilutes the influence. And so it's a good advantage. It's something that's going to help people, but it's not going to automatically guarantee that they'll win a leg or something like that.
Right. And I remember we did talk about this. I can't remember which season, but we even talked about, yeah, like the idea of just like on leg one saying, here's an express pass for all of you. What do you do with it? You know, which is an interesting approach, because then also, too, from an editing perspective, it gets so boring. Like, the worst being in the U.S. with like Nicole and Travis, or even, you know, some others where people just talk about the express pass every episode, and you just sit there and you're like, can anything else happen right now than this? With three teams having it, it's going to come up. I was very impressed too that nobody used it on the blackjack, because you always think when teams get the express pass, there's going to be the one like the Hamilton and the Michaela that just use it right away. And for teams to all come out of it, all be near the top, now we're looking ahead and we think this could be really interesting to see. It gives them an edge, but there is that question for all those teams, when are they going to use it? When's the best time? I don't know. I think I'm on board with you. I don't think it's that controversial, because, you know, all three came now. It's all early. It's not like the, like with an I like Survivor example, where the idol shows up at the final five and everybody's like, oh, my gosh, this isn't that case. It's early. We got some time to have some fun with it.
Yeah. And of course, you know, my game theory perspective on when you should use that express pass, and the idea is if you have two and you got to give away one, you need to give it away as soon as possible to maximize the number of opportunities where people have to use the Express Pass. And I think it's the same thing. It's early, maximize the number of chances we have to use them. And I think I want to point out it's early days. We're still on leg two, but this group of people seems to me to be a much more resilient group, I think is the word, than previous casts that we've seen where people are taking penalties left and right and just kind of saying, eh, I don't really want to do this, so I'm going to take my 2-hour penalty right now and not even really talking about it as if it's quitting. I think someone kind of hammered the fear of God into these people. I do not see them quitting tasks, and I don't see them using those express passes easily.
Right. And we did get a question on Facebook from John Johnston. Are you surprised after 2 episodes no one's taking penalties? I hadn't really thought about it so far, but that's a good point, because especially season 3 and a little bit on season 4, there were just constant talk about penalties. And I don't know if it's just because it hasn't been that hard, but I think the Heroes Edition thing has a factor too, where you get people that are generally competitive, people that have strong personalities, meaning that they are confident enough to start charities and nonprofits and such, or to go be a firefighter or whatever. A lot of these people on this race are confident that they are going to come through. So even if they're in 7th or 8th, they're not over there going, we're done, we're done, we got to, or, you know, we don't know what to do. And I think that's good for the show. It is a little sometimes fun for the train wreck. Everybody takes a penalty. There's some drama, but in general, you're right. This does feel like that's where it's so surprising when a team has a really minor mistake and all of a sudden they're 7th or 8th. Like, even though we talked about Joseph and Akash losing the tent, none of the teams really did terribly today. But you got to the point with the detour where one little mistake and a team was going to be last because there was just no margin for error.
Yeah, it's true. Like, everybody seems much hungrier, I guess, is how I would put it.
Right. And so we could see a case where a team that is doing very well has one mistake and they're gone or something, because there's just part of this could be too. We were in a pretty confined area here. There, the crazy thing, if you look at the final placements, is it almost is very similar to the first leg. But I don't think of this as being a terribly designed leg. I think a lot of it just was competence from the racers.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. So I want to backtrack again. We're going to do so much backtracking. It's like we've got our GPS. We don't know how to use it. What did you think of the way these express passes were distributed and handed out?
I thought they were okay. It was kind of interesting because each one was sort of different. You had Nancy and Melissa show up and they watched, you know, a ceremonial dance. And at first, for me, I thought they were in the wrong place because it was nothing like the rest. And granted, there were actually people, like we talked about, that was very confusing. But and then they were handed an express pass, which was funny because they were right there with another team, so which was sort of odd. But then you had, and I don't want to overly recap this, but the next one was something where you had to look in the box, which is a little bit harder. But then you had this third express pass, which required this trek for who knows how long, where I thought Leanne and Amar were in a different place. Like, they were in the wrong place. I thought they were like doing the whole go paint up someone's house kind of idea. Like, they had just wandered off the course to the cemetery and actually they were in the right place. Now, granted, they had the GPS, so you would think they would know where they were going, which they did. So, you know, it's kind of tricky because in a way, I don't want it to be so hard where a teams can just get eliminated for going for it. I do like there to be a little challenge. So I was kind of hoping for a mix here. What ended up working out? I thought it was okay. The best thing, like I mentioned earlier, is it was spread out enough where we got 3 teams having 3 express passes. When Dylan and Kwame started talking about how much they wanted it, I thought they're either going to get a bunch of them or get nothing. And they got nothing. But, you know, which is interesting to see where that will go. But I was okay with it. I found this task, like I said, to be the most interesting, even with some of the things we discussed about kind of it feeling a little bit odd.
Yeah, I kind of liked it. In fact, I wish that every stop on this GPS tour had involved them having to answer a riddle or complete a little challenge. And I kind of liked the confusion of just rolling up to the post office and being like, hey, do you have a coin for me? And the guy saying, no, what's your box number? Do you have any mail? And then having to figure out that that meant there was an express pass in there. I thought that was kind of clever, actually. And also the confusion of thinking you're going in the wrong place and you're about to go get murdered in a cemetery. Also fun. So I wish there'd been something like that. Like, you either get a coin or you get an express press pass or you get nothing. That was kind of fun. And I wish there'd been a little something extra on all of them to kind of throw people off a little bit more. So I thought from a leg design standpoint, it was a lot of fun to watch. And I liked that one person didn't get all of them. I think we got some people asking us questions about how did this work? Because I don't think it was very clear. We had Melanie ask us on Twitter, how did the Express Pass challenge even work? Curious on why teams went in such different sequences to gold coin stops if they were self-navigating. And I think, Dan, you can tell me how far off base I am with this, but I think the way these GPS devices work, and I'm not a geocacher by any stretch of the imagination, but I believe all of the sites had a beacon in them and you would just start blipping and it would say like, you know, there's something here, there's something here, there's something here. And every team gets to kind of choose which blip they want to go toward.
Yeah, I think it was something like that. And also as you got closer, it seemed to be more. And I know that I did one of these kind of scavenger hunt things at the zoo where we did terrible at something like this, but there was a button on that that said nearby. So you could actually look for the one that was closest, or there's different ways they can do it. But the way I saw it, yeah, is that basically there were beacons for the different places, but it wasn't like a map. It was a little less clear than that. It did seem like when you got closer to one, so teams could have just kind of wandered and then they saw on their GPS device, we're getting close to X or we're getting close to this. And it was probably confusing enough where teams kind of stumbled around onto things. It wasn't just a case where it said, go to XX and teams went there and then go to here, because that would just be really boring. So I'm guessing it was set up in a way where there was going to be confusion because that's what the show wants.
Well, yeah, if there's no confusion, there's no show.
It was edited in sort of an odd way where I think it purposefully so, not like bad editing. It was edited in a way where we didn't know where everyone was. We didn't understand the placements completely all the time. And it also made us wonder, who's going to get the express passes? And that makes it more entertaining, because if we're rooting for a certain team, then we're like, come on, you know, come on, Phil and Martina, get all the express passes, or, you know, which wasn't going to happen because they were a little behind. But, you know, the general idea is it creates more confusion among the teams. And for us, we're going to be more excited. So I think they did a good job in this way. And I agree. I think they could have actually, I think they didn't want to have more, or they didn't show it because of the time, but I think we could have spent a little more time here and a little less time on either of the other two things they did this week.
Yeah, I agree. But I think it was really fun to me that every single one of the tasks we saw this week had stakes attached to it. And that's not something you see in Amazing Race very often anymore. Like the first task, everybody was competing to win $5,000. Second task, everybody was trying to find the express pass. And there's always that added stakes of we need to get ahead so that we win the leg. But this added immediacy, I think, to every single task. We were looking for somebody to win the small prize on the way to the big prize.
That's a really good point. I hadn't thought about the $5,000, because when you have a leg, especially a leg that turns out not to be an elimination, they kind of often will just make the leg super hard. But here you did have kind of an extra sense of urgency, and it made it so at the end you didn't go, well, that was a waste of 43 minutes, because you come out of it and yes, there was $5,000 plus the express passes. So there is still movement in the show or the overall story, despite us not losing a team.
Yeah, I love that. I hope that every future edition of The Amazing Race is half as thoughtful.
Yeah. And also on Canada, they don't do that many straight up non-eliminations. They'll with speed bumps. A lot of times they do the double legs. They'll do that multiple times. So it kind of, what did you think about having it on leg two? Because I know last week I kind of said, I liked having it on leg one, which they didn't have. And you were saying no. Was this any better, or did you still kind of get this feeling like, well, we got gypped a little bit?
Yeah. And shout out to Cameron Taylor on Twitter, who asked us the same question. Is leg two too early? And I think similar to my point last week, I don't love seeing it this early. I feel like I want some forward motion. I want some momentum, but I also like keeping people on their toes, and nobody was expecting it this early. So I think in that case, it's nice to have it every so often. It's not the perfect place to put it, but if we put it here every so often, then you know every leg really could be a non-elimination leg.
Right. And the flip side being that you don't know when the eliminations are coming either. So you can hope that it's something's going to be, because sometimes people know it's a non-elimination. This, put this here, like if you do the first four eliminations, there will be a point where people will say, I know this is a non-elimination. Putting this here, you don't really know what's happening after that. So it's more, it's different. But yeah, for some reason, I know we're jumping ahead and we'll definitely get back to the detour. But for some reason, I wrote down a note during the blackjack. There was a point where I just felt like the show isn't really pushing this who finishes eighth thing very strong. There was no weird editing. There was nothing. So I was like, either Zineb and Monica are so far behind, or the show, it's an elimination, which I didn't know that was going to happen. But it was just kind of weirdly put together in a way where I felt like something feels a little off. Well before John did his whole, you know, I'm sorry to tell you, blah, blah, you know, fake out that he likes to do.
Yeah, I don't think he likes to do it. I think he has to do it.
He hates it. Though I do think that John does like telling people they're still in the race, because he's that kind of guy. He doesn't want to be mean and eliminate people. So that is true.
I think the only Amazing Race host that might have legitimately enjoyed eliminating people is Grant Bowler.
Yeah, he just wanted them all off the screen because he's like, I want to go back and do acting. I don't want to just, I got to go be on Defiance or something. I don't know. He doesn't want to work and worry about this. But it's funny to me that he did seem a little snide about it. But John does not have that problem. But yeah, I guess we should. Are we ready to talk about the detour?
I think we must choose the detour now. Because if we don't, we're just going to keep going in circles as if we have a defunct GPS device trying to point us in the direction of an express pass that's already been taken.
Yes. So the detour options were chance or dance. I don't know. And people asked us this, and I agree. Personally, this is coming from me personally. If I saw dance as the name, I'd be like, oh no, I'm going nowhere near that. And not even knowing that it's a can-can dance and stuff. But many teams tried. Few finished, but many tried. What do you think about this dance challenge?
Well, I think this is something that we talk about over and over the course of every season of The Amazing Race. We highlight this kind of task specifically as a particular type of team is going to be very, very good at it, and everybody else is going to be uniformly terrible at it. And sure enough, I think one team successfully completes the challenge. Everybody else ends up having to do the other one. And this is the kind of thing that everyone should expect to be seeing. Like, of the long list of things that Phil and Martina claim to not be prepared for, this should be like number one on the list is, if you're going on The Amazing Race, learn how to do choreography steps, because you know that it's going to be asked of you at some point. So that's thing number one. And thing number two is, this did feel very lopsided to me. This definitely seemed like blackjack was not a picnic, but it was far, far easier.
Yeah, it was one of the more lopsided detours I can remember seeing recently. And actually, two teams finished, but I understand why you would think that, because Leanne and Mar just killed it. And then Taylor and Courtney also finished, though I think the judges were very generous for him on that one. But they finished a little bit later. But in general, I think those two were pretty close to quitting, but then, you know, just kind of hung in there because I think there was no one else around. So they probably realized we can gain or we're going to lose too much. But I agree, because blackjack, I have played blackjack. I have never dealt blackjack, but I can see that being a case where you're going to miss once if you're not an expert. But even the people that look so clueless didn't take that long. Like, it was a few tries and whatnot. But the dance, I mean, some people, Adam. Oh, my goodness. I mean, there are people that I'm like, they are never going to finish. They will be there all day. So, and we didn't get the joy of seeing all the teams try, but the ones that did, it was pretty entertaining.
Yeah, I feel like this task was put there specifically so that you could see a couple of dudes in can-can outfits.
I agree. And that was, of course, they did not let us down, because I'm sure the show, when they set this up, was kind of thinking, please don't let everyone take the blackjack. People are, you know, because teams do fall for this, because they're like, sometimes there's this idea of, let's do something that sounds fun. Dancing sounds fun. How hard can that be? And then you had this look on their faces when the dancers came out and they're like, woo, and they're doing all this. And the look on everybody's faces was like, oh, no. oh no, we are not going to do this at all. And that was almost worth it for it, just to see those kinds of looks. But it did seem like, even though, I mean, the judging seemed hard, not the hardest dance judging we've ever seen, but it was still complicated enough for my thought is the blackjack, especially if you're in the front half of the group, would be a no-brainer.
Yeah, well, I think they do sort of set up the detours. And we've seen this a lot more transparently on the US version a few times, where there are two detour options and one of them, only three people at a time can do it. So everybody else has to go do the other one. And I think this was sort of set up like that, where only one person at a time could attempt the blackjack hand. So if you got there and five other people were waiting, you had to wait for all of them to get through before it was your turn. And so you have to weigh, like, waiting my turn to do this thing I probably can do versus mastering something that I'm not very good at to start with. And I think that was kind of where the pros and cons came in on this. But honestly, I thought the can-can, it looked challenging, but it's not the hardest dance I've seen people have to master on this show.
No, it wasn't one where it looked like, I mean, there were, you had to do all the moves, but it wasn't one where you had to do all these different arm motions in exact. Like the teams that made it through, even Leanne and Mar, Leanne wasn't very good at it. So it's not a case where they were so good. Like, we've had dancers on this show that were really good. Nobody was that good. So I agree. And I can't think of one off my head, but there have been some dance challenges where I went, I would be there for days and I would never pass and I would just be done. That wasn't the case here. But you're right. I think they did. They set it up where the lineup was going to freak people out. However, it was a weird setup because of the way the teams were spaced. You had a lineup near the end, but you never had a case where like seven people were waiting for that last one or seven teams or whatever. It was a little more spaced because some of the teams like Todd and Anna were so far ahead that they pretty much did it almost like, you know, Nancy, Melissa and such. They were gone. So you didn't have such a lineup that would be so intimidating for everyone.
Yeah, that's true. And the blackjack itself, it seemed like you had a lot of people that thought that playing blackjack online was going to make them automatically good at this task. And it turned out to be a little more complicated than just like being able to count to 21, which I think at first glance, I think this task was probably a little more balanced than we might give it credit for initially. Like can-can, that was difficult. Blackjack, not maybe as easy as we thought.
And that's a good point, because you, especially too, it's easy at home to sit there and say, oh, why do they keep miscounting? That was, the ace is one or 11. Come on. But when you're standing there and there's like, they're timing you because you saw people hesitate and then they were told, you know, they weren't up to Gertie standards and everything, which is always, there were a lot of judges in this like, I don't know what it was. There was just judges everywhere. But there is that getting up there and having to be on. So you saw some people, like all they really did was just froze, or they counted 21 to 22. So there was tricks to it. I don't want to sell it as, you know, it wasn't eating ice cream or something, but you know, there were other things that are sitting on a, I know I'm naming speed bumps, but you know what I mean? It wasn't the easiest thing ever, but it was still, it also felt a little weird. All right, tell me, blackjack, watching people deal blackjack is kind of boring, right? Because to me, we spent a lot of time seeing people hand out hands, and I don't blame the show. Once you've got the task, you got to show the task. It's the last one before the possible elimination. But that, when I talked last week about the US version just overshowing a task, I felt like we got a little overshown of this task.
Oh, for real. It was not something we needed to see everybody do. We didn't need to see every step of the process, for sure. I think we could have actually spent more time watching people screw up the can-can. I think that would have made for far more entertaining television.
Yeah, unfortunately, there weren't enough teams there a lot of the time. But yeah, I have my notes and it's like Adam fails, Monica fails, Akash fails. It's like, this is not very that thrilling. I'm not writing anything else. So it's like, you know, that's the one downside. It didn't make it for a terrible leg. It's just that, you know, with detours, it's hard to predict because generally, yeah, you have if a bunch of people were dancing, you could have just some ridiculous moments. But because only two teams, there were three, I believe, that switched, but they switched fairly quickly. It became more of a case where it was just like, who's going to get the blackjack? Who's it going to be? Is it going to be Akash or is it going to be Zineb, you know, and that's where it ended, you know.
Yeah, and I wish there had been at least like two blackjack stations, because I think that would have made it a little more exciting toward the end there, like especially with Akash and Joseph finishing and taking off. there was one team remaining, and Zainab and Monica were sitting there saying, oh, well, we have to do it on this try or we're completely out of it. But you kind of already knew it didn't matter if they got it on that try because they still had to do the task and they were still there. And I think having them go head to head would have been way more exciting.
Yeah, and that's a good point because that also might have added a lot more just tension overall because teams would have got out there fast. You might have seen more mixing up of the spots because, I mean, I don't know how much, you know, Adam and Courtney dropped from they came out of the Woods Challenge in third and they ended up seventh, which was kind of like, oh, but so there was some mixing there and Dylan and Kwame did the opposite and kind of did well and flipped up there. But it did kind of get to a situation where once they finished, I thought they would use a lot of kind of fake editing and be like, we're lost, Joseph, where are we? But they didn't even do any of that. Part of it probably due to timing and then on elimination. But it ended the last 5 or 10 minutes of the episode was not the strongest we've seen on the show. But with all the teams left, I think we'll be fine.
Yeah, I think it'll be okay. And I guess you needed to have one blackjack station because it was slightly easier than the can-can. So if you had two people, it'd be in and out twice as fast, I guess. But it did kind of sap some of the tension out of it, especially as everybody started to gravitate toward the blackjack.
Yeah, and there was teams left and they arrived at the pit stop in the same order they left, basically. So there wasn't much room. There was nothing after that, really, despite that they had to drive and all that, you know. So,
Dan, at the end of leg two, who is surprising you in a good way? Who is surprising you in a bad way?
I don't want to just name the same people from last time, you know. I will say that in a bad way, I mean, you could really pick anybody from my team, really, but the team, obviously, that is still surprising me, unfortunately, is Adam and Courtney. You know, they did increase the kiss count, I think, by a lot, but they just, I mean, they seem to be fine, but they're goofy and they finished low, I think, eighth and seventh now. For a team that seemed like obvious front runners, this is not looking like a fluke that they were low last week. So we'll see what happens, but I'm feeling a little risky on that. On the other side, I'm not going to pick one of the top teams. I've been impressed by Phil and Martina's resilience again, because Martina looked at that blackjack table like, oh my gosh, we're done. And I wondered maybe this will be where it'll stop them because she doesn't know. And they still finished sixth. They're not finishing near the top, but I have found that they are hanging in there pretty well. And beyond the kind of front runners, I think they've shown that they can handle adversity well twice now and could sneak around like we mentioned last week.
Yeah. And I mean, speaking of Phil and Martina, I think we got to talk about their strategizing at the beginning of the leg. Before they even did any tasks, they kind of made an interesting strategic move in deciding they're going to cut all their stuff down to one backpack and get rid of their other backpack.
Yeah, that was really smart. And I'm glad you mentioned that because it came so early in the episode that I almost forgot about it. But it's good that they recognize right away, you know, we're not the most physically fit. We, you know, maybe Dylan and Kwame can carry around large bags. I don't know if they have them, but you get the idea. And they cut it back. And of course, then this did fit with the theme of heroes. You know, Sam Grandin on Facebook asked, how many degrees did Phil and Martina's good deed warm your heart? Now, I'm a little of a cynical person, a little bit sometimes, and I don't think it warmed my heart that much. I think it's a nice move. I think the way it was presented was a little bit overkill, but I do think they're good people. It just kind of like it rung a little odd to me, maybe just because the heroes thing kind of is a bit much. But what do you think on this, Jess?
Yeah, I'm with you. It was a little over the top, but it was nice. It was sweet. I think it shows what kind of people they are. And it's certainly like that's how they got cast in the first place is by being super altruistic. And so to give them an opportunity to kind of give them something to hang that on, I thought that was okay.
And there was that odd moment, too, where he's like, oh, this is really nice or something, which, again, this is the Amazing Race Canada.
Like someone is kicking him in the ribs and saying, okay, what do you say when someone gives you a present?
It's like with kids. It's like, thank you. Now, but hey, this is part of the show. It's the Heroes Edition. I don't know. We won't see a moment exactly like this, but there are going to be other kind of nice moments, I'm sure. And I would rather have this than other types of cast members who just were like, I don't know what they would do with the bag, but something really nefarious or whatever. This was nice. It's a nice move, but yeah, I didn't go that far, but it just a little odd to me. Not that they did it. That was cool. Just the way it was filmed was strange.
Yeah, it felt a little forced.
But, you know, it's cool. You know, this is why I'm a podcaster and I don't own a nonprofit. So, you know, it's a little bit different.
As much as I say podcasters are the real heroes, it's like, when have I ever given my backpack to a homeless person?
Yeah, that I haven't done that yet. Maybe that's something we got to work towards sometime when we're carrying a backpack through a city that we don't need.
Yeah. So do you want to tackle a couple of the questions here? I think we've gotten through most of the questions, and I want to thank everybody again for tweeting many, many terrific questions at us. And I think hopefully we hit all the high points, but maybe we got a few good questions that we want to tackle here.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of questions. Okay, so I'm going to ask you, because my money is on the Woods tent judge, but Alicia Brewster asks, who is the best local and why was it the Can-Can judge? So I easily would say you're wrong and flip it around. But I'm curious for your thoughts on the Can-Can judge compared to the other judges, including the Blackjack and Tent judge.
Well, I can't even remember anything about the Blackjack judge, except that I couldn't tell if the Blackjack judge was supposed to be Diamond Tooth Gertie or if Diamond Tooth Gertie is kind of more of a feeling than an individual.
So you're saying power rankings, number three is the Blackjack judge. That's hard to say. What would you, one or two? Who is number one in the judge rankings?
Well, Dan, I think you sold me on it. I think Tent Judge was the better judge. I think just because she had a couple of days to think about how she's going to be a judge on The Amazing Race Canada, and she went home and sat around the dinner table with her kids saying, okay, what are all the cool things I can say while I'm judging this task? And they brainstormed, and she brought the whole list with her. And Can-Can Judge had a lot of personality. She definitely rocked a feather boa, but she had several canned lines that she gave out, and maybe she didn't have enough opportunity to give them out, but I really felt like the variety of feedback that we got from Tent Judge really puts Tent Judge in the number one spot.
Yeah, well, I obviously agree. I just started thinking about her saying, you're ready to camp. And I started laughing in my head again. I almost lost it. And also her like hugging the teams. But yeah, I mean, I think what got people excited about the Can-Can judge is when one of the teams said, were we close? And the Can-Can judge laughed at them, which I did enjoy. But I can't remember who that was. But I did enjoy that. So that a solid number two. And I can understand the argument there for that. So another important question, possibly the most important, from Melanie on Twitter again. Who looked best in the Can-Can outfit? Was it Adam or Taylor? This is the question we need to answer.
I think Adam probably looked the most ridiculous because he's kind of the most buff and perhaps the least suited to wear the bustier. But I thought they both really rocked it.
Yeah, neither one luckily had the whole like, I'm so uncomfortable, but you know, kind of thing, which you sometimes see with kind of buff dudes. So I like that they both embraced it. So yeah, I think that I'll go with Taylor but it's close. I don't know why I'm really thinking through this. Like, this is a really important question here. But yeah, I like the way they both approached it as a fun thing.
Dan, all of our questions are important.
Yes, they are. Do you have any questions for me from the list here?
Well, we got a couple of questions about next week, and I think we don't really know a lot about Salt Spring Island. So, you know, again, us being from Canada's pants down here in the U.S., we don't necessarily know all the particulars of all the locations, but Salt Spring Island is apparently known as a celebrity destination. Mark Carroll on Twitter says, two things come to mind about Salt Spring hippies and rock stars. That's where Randy Bachman and a slew of aging Canadian entertainers have properties. So there might be something there. And then I think Jeffrey K on Twitter pointed out that it's odd that they're reversing course and going back towards Victoria, because this is the same ferry terminal they drove out of. Any team getting lost is clearly not paying attention, has no shot at a final challenge. Dan, what do you think about this level of backtracking?
Well, first of all, Jeffrey, have you met Dylan and Kwame and Zanab and Monica? Because one of those two teams is getting lost again next week. I just have a feeling. So, you know, it's fine. It's a little weird, but I mean, you know, if they have a whole thing where they all have to drive and get on that ferry again, it's going to be weird. Be like, now we're going to go back over. And then they do a task at the starting line, which actually I kind of enjoy just for the silliness of it. But now it's okay. I, as long as they do good tasks and things on that line go, I mean, it does look like they're going to eat some pie next week or something. So there's going to be some ridiculous stuff. You know, Martina seems excited for that one, even though it's not sewing. So, but I don't know. I'm okay with the backtracking if they create a good leg. That's interesting.
I'm surprised nobody made a Stand By Me reference.
Well, you know, only so much time on this. But let me see. What else do we get asked? We do need to talk about the kiss count.
Yep.
Because I thought I only counted three, but John Johnston said there were six, probably. AM on Twitter said there were three by the first commercial break. So, and then Cesar Guzman just asked if it could replace the giver count. So no one really told me for sure, though. We're all over the map here. So I don't know if we can keep it up to that extent. All we know is it's definitely still a thing. So people, keep sending in. We need more reliable counts. Somebody go back, watch episodes 1 and 2. Give us the real count. This is what we need you to do as homework, and then we can move forward.
Yep, it's true. Or maybe we need to just start tallying, because I think I was keeping a pretty solid giver count, at least through like episode 5 or so last season. So maybe we're just doing a bad job as podcasters here. We need to be more on top of this. Yeah, the kiss count, I think it was somewhere between 3 and 6.
Yeah, so how about let's just assume, I think the first one we were thinking it was about 4 or 5 or something. Let's just say they're at 10 right now. Let's go from there. So we will try to keep track. And I think the two of us right now should put down our cards on the table, not for blackjack, and say what we think it's going to be for the rest of the season. What do we think the total kiss count will be? Should we do this?
We could do this. I will give you a specific number and you can take the over or the under on this. I think the kiss count at the end of the season will be 53.
Well, see, I'm very pessimistic because they are on Team Dan, so I think they're not going to last long enough. So I'm going to put the kiss count at 30 because I did not want to say, oh, I think it'll be 51, just because there's no fun in that. So I'm going to put it at 30, and so are we saying this is the total count, including the 10, right?
Yes, including the 10 that have already happened. And thank you for not prices writing me on this.
No, because I could just say 52 and my odds of winning would be really good. But that would also make this really boring. So actually, since we're counting the 10, I'm going to say 33. 33 is my final total. And I should write that down somewhere because this obviously is starting to become a trending topic on Twitter. And as we go along, I think it's just going to explode. So this is exciting.
Well, for those of you that got all the way to the end of our podcast, why don't you feel free to tweet at us with hashtag kiss count and tell us what you think the kiss count is going to be this season. And there are absolutely no stakes here. Nobody's winning anything, but maybe there are some bragging rights in it for you if you beat one or both of us.
Yes, yeah, so it seems like people are interested in this, and I think it's going to be fun, and I need to do a closer job of tallying as we go forward here, because I want to prove my mastery in this very important decision, because I may not win with my draft team, but I'm going to win this.
Fair enough. Well, here's the other important question. What number do you think is going to be higher, the number of times Adam and Courtney kiss each other or the number of times Adam and Courtney call each other babe?
Oh, I think the second one is definitely going to be higher, just because, especially when they get to some difficult tasks like roadblocks, I don't think it's even going to be close. I don't know if we could even tally that, but I think the answer is definitely the babe answer.
Yeah. Well, and again, feel free to give us a guess on that as well. Hashtag babe count.
Yes. And my guess will be very high, but I will leave that to the listeners before I make any decisions on that front.
Well, that's fair enough, Dan. So with that, I think we've reached the end of all the things that we can discuss. Like, we're off at the end of the earth. We are at the Yukon of this podcast, if you will. So I just want to give a shout out to everybody that's been tweeting excellent questions and feedback to us. We've been enjoying that quite a bit. There are a lot of ways to get in touch with us. Twitter is the most expeditious most of the time. And you can tweet at me at Haymaker Hattie.
And I am at the Dan Heaton. And I will say these first two episodes, compiling these questions has been so much fun. And we're getting so many good ones. And please keep it up. Even if we haven't read yours yet, we will definitely do so down the road.
Yes, we definitely read everything that gets tweeted to us. Another way to get in touch with us and a great way to interact with a lot of your fellow podcast listeners is to become a patron of Rob as a Podcast, which you can do by going to robasawebsite.com/Patreon and signing up. And patrons at the $10 level and above get access to an exclusive Facebook group where you can connect with the community. There is a questions thread that goes up in Facebook every week. And also, whenever you're not in Canada and you need ways to watch the show, that's where a lot of our links and other tips get dropped. So if that's something you were wondering and you didn't know where to go to find out how to watch this, and somehow you listened to two episodes of this podcast anyway, become a patron and all will be revealed in the patron group. So with that, thank you once again, Dan Heaton, for joining me on this wild and crazy dog sled ride through the north of Canada.
Yes, it was a fun. I think we're really starting to get our role here for this season, and it's going to be fun.
Yeah, it's a great time. I'm really enjoying this cast and I'm enjoying these destinations. So I'm fully on board now, and I'm excited to hear what the rest of you have to think about this episode. So looking forward to hearing your feedback, and we'll see you next week.